coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com for all things you need to know. Above the content of HagmanReport.com, or above the content of at Hagman Report, is a banner. Of course, click on that banner. There you will find our video and audio, every program. Just click on the banner, click on the program, and look through the links. Everything you want to know about the Hagman Report is in the links, including today's guest, Dr. Richard Proctor. We're going to have a great discussion, Dr. Proctor and I, today about things that you need to know, specifically about how to fight this globalist agenda that is taking place. But I do have some sad news to report, folks, and I'm sure you've already heard this. Rush Limbaugh has passed away. He passed away today at age 70 from stage 4 lung cancer. This Catherine Limbaugh had, made the announcement during the opening of this, or at the open today. And it's very sad, for a lot of reasons. And I can now report to the audience, back when when Barack Hussein Obama was running for the presidency, I had the occasion, and you can read about this in the archives at CanadaFreePress.com. I had the occasion to take a statement, a sworn statement by a talk show host. I've talked about this before, about this talk show host not being able to talk about the constitutional eligibility of Barack Hussein Obama, being prohibited from talking about it. Not only being prohibited from talking about it, but being prohibited by contract from talking about the stories about it. Specifically, the Chicago newspaper had reported about the brouhaha with respect to the constitutional ineligibility of Barack Hussein Obama not being a natural born citizen. It was a story about that. Where did this come from? I can report now, because obviously with the death of Rush Limbaugh, it was from that platform. I don't know what to say.
My grandfather introduced me to Rush Limbaugh, not personally, but the show, when I was really young. So
you've been listening.
Well, yeah, long time.
I stumbled upon him when he was on 56 radio stations. And he was
huge.
Yeah,
now huge talk show host.
Yes, absolutely. So our prayers go out to Rush Limbaugh and his family, or the family of Rush Limbaugh. It's really horrible. It really, you know, cancer is horrible. And truly, you know what, I believe in my heart of hearts, and I don't have any evidence to back this up, but I do believe that we have the ability to cure cancer. And the medical industrial complex, different from the military industrial complex, the medical industrial complex has really tamped down any progress on cancer.
Can't make money on a cure.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Eric the Tech. Eric the Tech, he's the man. But go ahead.
Have you ever been to inside any of the clinics, like Cleveland Clinic? Or
yes.
It blows your mind how big
and how many lush
people,
yeah,
just get pushed in there to get poisoned.
You know, my father passed away from cancer, and he was a robust man. I mean, I watched what the chemotherapy, he took one chemotherapy, session or whatever it was. And he said, I'll never do it again.
Yeah. My grandfather did it twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, and the second time he's like, nope, this is it.
Just, yeah. So
I don't want to knock that too much because I think there is a small place for that type of treatment, but man,
that's
it's a cash cow.
Sadly, it is. And you know, what I was looking at too, the sewage pits of the left. And I know, folks, I know, but you have to take, you have to go to the enemy camp to see what they're saying. And if you think for one second, ladies and gentlemen, if you think for one second that we can get along, can coexist, peaceably coexist, can have dialogue with the communist left, then I don't know what to tell you except no, we can't. I went to the sewage pit, in my view, a sewage pit titled Democratic Underground. And these stellar human beings are saying things like you'd expect, right? Good riddance. He's responsible for much of the hate and acrimony. Tots and pears, which is obviously, that's a play on thoughts and prayers. I have to go polish my dancing shoes. And every hateful thing that you can think of. That's the communist left. That's the left. This is a human being. Rush Limbaugh, and he did a lot of great things. You may not like him, but you know what? I'm going to stop right there because, my thoughts, my prayers are with the Limbaugh family. And we lost a radio icon today, and I'm sad about that. But what I'm not sad about is Dr. Richard Proctor. He's still with us. Not only that, you talk about a vibrant, and I mean a robust, vibrant guy, is Dr. Richard Proctor. ProvisInstitute.com. That's his website, ProvisInstitute.com. He's the author of a number of books, including Saving the Constitution. You all need to have one of those. And I really, really, really sad, I'm sad to report that if the books that I sent to the various representatives and senators, if they would have got into that, and by the way, Mike Pence, if he would have read Saving the Constitution, he would not have made the blunder he did on January 6th of this year. He abdicated his responsibility. Now, there's more to it than that, but I'm painting with a broad brush there. Saving the Constitution is my go-to book. Any kind of question I have, and I've got 7 or 8, you can even ask Eric the Tech, 7 or 8 books on the Constitution. I don't even crack them open anymore. It's only Saving the Constitution when it comes to things about the Constitution. So please, folks, get your copy. Or get an additional copy, send it to a friend, but make sure they read it. Give it to your pastor, your neighbor, the police officer that comes to your door to tell you that you can't post on Facebook, things like, throwing masks on people's property, or whatever the case might be. I'm referring to a Palm Beach visit. I guess it was over the weekend or earlier in the week. But Saving the Constitution is a great book, along with other books about economics and the Liberty series, of course. Can't recommend them higher than that. Saving the Constitution, ProvisInstitute.com. And I want to toss something else out there. I want to thank each and every one of you listening to this program. We had a fundraiser to keep us on the air. We don't do money bombs like Alex Jones does. We really don't do that. We don't really have products here. We do have our coffee, which much of the proceeds goes to the fight against human and child sex trafficking. But we really don't have money bombs. I just want to say thank you to the people who have helped us out to stay on the air. We're going to be on the air as long as there is air to be on. We've made some arrangements with that. And one more suggestion I have for you before we get right to Dr. Proctor, uninterrupted. One more suggestion I have for you. Go to the satellite phone store. Okay, go to HagmanReport.com. Do it this way, HagmanReport.com, and look on the upper right there on our homepage, HagmanReport.com. You'll see a link to the satellite phone store. There it is right there on your screen. If you're watching this, you can see it. If you're listening to this, just trust me. There's a picture of a phone, and it's a satellite phone. It's actually a satellite phone store has entered into an agreement with Steve Quayle and myself where there's a special offer there. I'm not going to get into it, but it's a special offer for the listeners and viewers of the Hagman Report. So do that. I know many people have done that already to get a satellite phone. Get one for your spouse too, or that person close to you, because when things go south, the cell service goes down, internet goes down, whatever the case might be, this will be perhaps the only way to communicate. And there's another initiative that we're involved in, and that's Galileo. More about that later. But satellite phone store, what a great deal on satellite phones. All right, so. Again, thank you to everyone out there for your support. I can't thank you enough. And that goes for people like Dr. Proctor too. You know, support Dr. Proctor as well by purchasing his book. There you're going to get a lot of great information, his books, a series of books. So without any further ado, let's get right to Dr. Proctor. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, good, Doug. I'm glad to be here today. Outstanding. I was out in the sun yesterday and really had a good suntan. But anyway, I want to mention something about the Obama stuff. I have a video that he produced here in the United States, either just as he was being elected or before he was elected, where he, for 20 minutes, tells all the audiences that he's talking to, he is not a natural-born citizen. His words, his picture, he's there. He was born in Kenya, and Kenya is very proud to have the first president of the United States from their country.
You know, he could have been born on the steps of the White House, but the and I learned this from I mean a lot of this from Saving the Constitution as well as subsequent cases. To be a natural born citizen, both parents have to be.
Just one.
Or I'm sorry, just one?
Yeah, just one.
You know, I get confused easy. I'm old.
Yeah, just one. But just one has to be, no matter where you're born. And you're right. You could be born on the steps of the Capitol with one parent that's a citizen, and you are a natural-born citizen. Right. If you're born of one parent in Moscow during the heat of the Cold War, you are a natural-born citizen of the United States.
Okay.
You have one parent that's a citizen. No matter where you're born in the world, you are a natural-born citizen. That's how it's been defined.
All right. Thank you very much for correcting me on that. Sometimes I just, you know, I go sideways and I got to be brought back into the right lane.
No. It's just the difference between one and two. It used to be two. Now it's one. Was two in the past. Now it's one.
But you know, that whole thing, I don't want to belabor this, but really this is about allegiance to a country. You know, we talk about America first. We talk about make America great again or keeping America great. And then we see this whiplash with Biden. This is really about allegiance and I mean, that's what this was really intended. So we wouldn't have back at the time of the Constitution, we would not have someone who was allied or had allegiance to the crown, right?
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
And that goes for today too. I mean, can you imagine? And people talk about Donald Trump being owned by the Russians or being a Russian asset. Well, we've got Biden who's a puppet of the Communist Chinese Party. So,
That's very clear.
Yeah, absolutely. It's clear. Yes, absolutely. So, but thank you for that, history lesson about Obama. And you're right. I remember, and I think that's been, has that not been scrubbed from the, internet for the most part, that video that you're referencing?
I'm not sure. It's called Natural Born Citizen, and it's actually alleging about Harris. It's pointing out that Harris is not a natural born citizen, and then it brings Obama into the picture over and over and over and over again.
Okay.
20 minutes.
Okay, now I know what you're talking. Yes, okay, and I stand corrected on that too. I know what you're referencing. In fact, I'm going to try to get it up in a couple of days on HagmanReport.com. All right, very good. Wow. Well, thank you for that. All right. So, where do you want to go today?
Well, I think maybe we need to spend some time with counties that are turning out to be constitutional sanctuaries.
All right.
Last night, I spent a couple of hours in Malad, Idaho, where they are doing a county constitutional sanctuary. And we talked at length about that. And I said, guys, now let's think about this just for a minute. You guys have a constitutional sanctuary, which means that if a government agency from wherever, Homeland Security, decides to put a camera on your farm, to photograph and make sure that you are not planting what they told you not to. You've taken a third of your acres out of planting, and they have a camera that they put there quietly, dug down. You don't know it's there. You have the right to enforce that. But how? How? You can tell them to take it off, but one farmer won't work. You've got to have some enforcing body. You have got to have somebody to assist you to make it happen. And I talked at length about the militia. And, you know, I was talking to a group of guys who are already militia-type guys and gals.
How'd it go?
And, they're excited about it. Their concern was they're going to get a bad name because everybody talks about militia being a bad thing. They think of a bunch of guys that are just seedy. They're going to go in and just shoot up stuff. That's not the militia. A regularly, properly formed militia is the tool of your state. It says it very clearly in the Second Amendment, which everybody should read over and over and over again, because it says right there in the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia, capital M, is necessary for the security of a free state. Hmm. Now, I changed a couple of words there to make it sound the way it really sounds. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. I changed the wording just a little. A well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of a free state today.
Hmm.
There's over 1,000 counties. Over 1,000 counties that are organizing sanctuary counties. The fellow Noah, I forget his last name, he's the guy who's by himself running it on his own nickel. He's keeping track of all of them. But when he and I talked on the phone, he says, you know, the thing I'm lacking is some legitimate legal resolutions that I can send out so that these people can have some item that they can have in writing. And I'm not an attorney, he said, and I said, me neither. I'm not an attorney, and I shouldn't write one of those. But if there's someone in your audience, vast audience when you're talking on the Hagman Show, is an attorney that would be willing to donate a little time, not a lot, just enough to get some resolutions established with Noah and his coordination of the sanctuary counties, if we just have some of that, so there's some documentation that they can use and follow and be legally a militia.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Let's put the call out for that. I mean, we had 3.5 million downloads on one platform last month. There's bound to be, and I do know there are attorneys who listen to this program. So let's put the call out for that. Now, would this not be state specific? In other words, What might be having to be written in Idaho different than New York or Pennsylvania, for example?
The attorneys would have to decide that. But if the states won't do a militia, then you go back to the Declaration of Independence, where it says if the government deviates or stops providing your freedoms, then the people have a right to abolish or alter that government.
Right.
That's the authority, whether the state will do anything or not. And that's not state related. That's Declaration of Independence.
It's federal, right. Yes, and it is up to us once the government becomes corrupted, not working, non-functional, as we're seeing today, then yes, absolutely. So, all right, so if there are any attorneys out there who are interested in assisting the draft, as I understand it, the drafting of resolutions related to militias, am I correct in saying this?
Yes, it's related to setting up a county as a sanctuary county for the Constitution.
Okay.
The militia is a part of it, but it's for having a county resolution for a county to become a sanctuary county for the Constitution and all parts of it.
All right. So folks, that's the call. If you know of any attorneys, if you have given birth to an attorney, I'm almost joking, but not really. If there are any attorneys out there listening
to this.
That'd
be nice.
Yes.
No schooling, no nothing. You just go right out.
Noah's the guy who's dedicating his time, his money, and his efforts to doing this. He started out coordinating. Now he has maps showing where they all are. Oh, yes, he's done a fantastic job. But he's not an attorney, and he can't afford to hire one because he's on his own nickel. And another thing would be nice to donate to him to help him do what he's doing. I mean, here's a fellow who's working hard on his own nickel to do something that's really needed. And we need to help him do it. So I just mentioned that. This dude is a good dude. He's not asking for anything except those resolutions. And I just think we ought to support him in more than that.
All right.
Just my own thoughts, though.
I think that, look, this is what we need to do right now. Because we need to exhaust all of the legal options before we take to the cartridge box. And, you know, I talked about this yesterday, the ballot box. Well, we saw what happened with that. The soap box are taking it away from us, through the digital square, the town square. So now, you know, I would much prefer a peaceful resolution to things. This sounds like a good idea. So should people maybe get a hold of you through email or?
Yes, I can help them get in touch with Noah. All I need them to do is ask me for his contact information and I'll send it to them.
All right. So
you can find it. Just go on the website, Constitutional Sanctuary Counties or whatever, however the phrase goes. And he's right there. You'll see it in a minute. You don't have to hunt.
Okay. All right. All right. Sounds good. Okay. I'm all in favor of that. And it's about time because, wouldn't it be great to be able to walk outside your door and not be molested by, you talk about fascists, but by the fascists who say you have to wear a mask. You got to do this. You got to do that. I mean, to me, or you can't open carry, you can't have a firearm, or whatever the case might be. Getting back to the original spirit of America, that would be great, and thank you for doing that. Yeah.
Yes.
We need that.
It would be very good. You know, I was at that meeting in Malad. One person came with a mask at his own desire. Nobody else had a mask.
Yeah, you want to wear a mask? Great. Wear a mask. If you don't want to, you know.
He did. One person. Nobody else.
Okay.
That's there. Nobody was sitting 6 feet apart. We had regular room, regular chairs with regular people sitting together like we always used to do before the lie came out.
it blows my mind when I look at this. We have as a public, we are so brainwashed that people don't understand that we have never successfully vaccinated against any coronavirus. There are no successful vaccines, for example, against a coronavirus that have ever been developed. And I say that this isn't even a vaccine, what they're pushing, but nonetheless. But you see people lined up wanting or ready to get vaccinated. It's just, to me, it's incredible. So that's just one thing. So let's kind of break free of this brainwashing. And start begin to think for ourselves, and that's really that's a good idea. What you're talking about. So anyway,
you know, Merrick has stopped producing. There was a producer. Merrick was a producer of vaccines. Because of what's happened, they will no longer produce it.
Yep.
Now they're trying to develop a pill to help your body not be overcome by the vaccine. It's not quite said that way, but I think that's what it means. And that's Merrick. They said on their statement, just get the disease and let your body get over it. It's no problem.
Man.
Don't take the vaccine. That was Merrick, that company.
Well, you know, there's a problem when pharmaceutical companies developing this so-called non-vaccine vaccine are immune from litigation and lawsuits by the emergency Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. They're granted immunity right through to 2024. So, you know, there's a problem there.
You know, Doug, that's another one of the laws that's not in accordance with the Constitution that should be ignored, revoked, thrown in the chat, trash, whatever. That's not in accordance with the Constitution. Article 6 says no law that's not in accordance with the Constitution stands. None. Zip, zero. That's one of them. Doesn't stand.
And that's a good point. Didn't Marbury versus Madison also reaffirm that? I can't.
You're referring to the right one. Marbury versus Madison,
okay.
1803. That was Marshall's pet. And he said, these are the words. Now, you can look up the decision for yourself if you want, but this is really close to exactly what he said in his decision. Anything that's against the Constitution is null and void. And through judicial review, we will establish what's constitutional or not. Now, if you look at that statement very closely, it's circular.
Yeah.
He says in the very first sentence, nothing that's in accordance with the Constitution is valid. But even though the Constitution say it, we're going to do it. So we're going to do it. It's not valid. There's the circle. Just goes round and around. We're going to do it, but it's not valid. It's not valid, but we're going to do it. It's not valid. We're going to do it. It's not valid. But that's the circular reasoning. In his very statement, he says what he's going to say next is unconstitutional.
Okay. Which, yeah, I guess I didn't pay attention to that after that comma, you know, but, and then the rest of that, which it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Okay. Well, nonetheless, Constitution, if it's anti-constitutional, it's no law at all.
That's right.
Right.
If it does not in accordance with it, that's Article 6, Paragraph 2 of Article 6.
You know, and I just want to interject one thing here. I know a cornerstone of our representative republic is our elections. And every show I say this, and I should have said this at the onset, folks, I am not over November 3rd. I just want to toss that in there. No one listening and viewing this program should be over election day, what happened on election day, the theft of our elections.
I'm
going to tell you something. Our country and our Constitution rests upon free and fair elections, and we did not have one. It was stolen from us. And those people who want to move on, no, I'm not moving on. We shouldn't move on. We can't move on. We have to prosecute those who are responsible for the theft of the election of 2020. I just wanted to toss that in there while I was thinking about
it. I think that documentary, two-hour documentary by Liddell, is outstanding. Last 30 minutes. If you can't watch all 2 hours,
right,
watch the last 30 minutes. It's absolutely crucial for us all to see the last. And they told me last night, they told me you have it on your website here.
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, we had the two of the three executive producers on, Brandon House and Mary Fanning. We had them on right after it was released. And we're going to be having Mike Lindell come on as well. This, according to the information, you know, he's agreed in principle to come on. It's just a matter of scheduling at this point because he's got so many other things going on. But absolute proof, you've got to watch it. You're right. The last 35 minutes, you got to really get into that. And that kind of encapsulates the theft. So you're right.
That's on your website, $399 for that DVD.
I'm not sure if that's on our website or where that's from.
That's on Worldview Weekend.
Okay.
Website, which is Brandon House's.
Everybody needs to get that.
That is, yes. The DVD is free. That's just shipping cost.
Right. And you can watch it free online. So, if you want. If you want your own copy. Go ahead.
www.tv.com/proof.
Right.
Yes.
Yep. 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 That's, and there it is. But, no, I just, again, people who want to move on from November 3rd, no, our enemies, I believe, must be treated as enemies of the Constitution, the Constitutional Republic. And again, my guest is, Richard Proctor, provostinstitute.com every Wednesday. It's great to have him with me today. And he's got a lot to talk about. And it's pretty interesting too about sanctuary counties. As you were talking about that to me, that's, we have to fight at that level, don't we? We really can't fight DC.
Yes. Look at how many states are violating the Constitution with these lockouts and these masks and these social distancing and health departments going around closing businesses. You know, that tells us that the state is not reliable. That state is not reliable. Fortunately, right. Those people in North and South Dakota are in a good place, but the rest of us are not there. So the state's not reliable. It's got to be the county. And in some cases, the only person's going to be the county sheriff, but he's an elected official and he can deputize and organize the militia for the protection of that county.
All right.
And you go right back to the Second Amendment here. A well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of a free county. And the rights of the people shall not be infringed. You can't take it away from them.
All right. Well, for a free county. Okay.
I just changed it a little bit.
Yeah, okay. I figured, but I get the idea. And I think everyone else does as well.
Yeah. I mean, the Constitution says state. But if the state ain't going to do it, now what are you going to do? Twiddle your thumbs?
Yeah. Right.
You go back to the Declaration of Independence, which the Second Amendment is enforcing. You go back to that and say, I have the right to abolish or alter any government that is vacating my rights. There you have it. That's your chain of authority right there.
And you know, right now, what I'm seeing are counties, for example, who are rising up against forced immigration or immigrant placement. I'm seeing that, okay? I'm seeing counties, not necessarily states, but counties rising up and saying, look, we're not going to enforce your gun ban or your gun modification ban, if you will, you know, how they modify the laws. We're not going to enforce any of this, or even – in some cases, the mask mandates. Now, that happened on the state level in Florida, urging the counties. And that's an interesting study by itself. When you look at what DeSantis did or said to the counties, that's interesting. So if we do this, how you're saying from the county up, it doesn't have to be from the state down, nor should it be. It should be originating in the counties.
It's called grassroots.
There it is. There it is. People, I'll tell you what, folks, you want solutions. There's a solution. And it sounds like it's going to work. So, okay. In other words, a constitutional county where, hey, if it's not constitutional, it ain't flying in our county.
That's exactly. But they do need those resolutions so that they can have some written document that the legal attorneys will agree with. They do need to have a resolution.
Now, there wouldn't be any conflict, or would there be any conflict? No, there wouldn't be. There would be conflict with the federal government.
And today, yes.
Today, and the state governments today, but not with the Constitution as written. Obviously.
We'll go right back to Article 1, Section 8, Paragraphs 15 and 16. The Congress is to provide for calling forth the militia. He can't call forth a militia if it doesn't exist. And the militias are for state militias, just like they were in the Revolutionary War. Then it says that the militia is to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Now, that's what militias are for. In every colony and every state, During the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, the militias were organized in the states. Everyone. Today, almost none. They substituted it with the National Guard. But guys, listen to the word. State militia, National Guard. What does that say? Already, just those words. National Guard. Who pays the National Guard? The federal government. Who arms the National Guard? The federal government. Who organizes and takes care of it? The national government. It is not a state organization. It's a national organization.
Wait a second. Help me understand this, because I'm thinking that the National Guard will say from, New Jersey. That's in Washington. So you're telling me that the federal government is funding the state National Guard of all states, including New
Jersey? Yes, that's where they get their money from. They're GS people. They're federal people. The military, they're getting their checks. They're wearing their uniforms and they get checks just like any other military place.
I didn't know that. This is an outpost.
This is an outpost of the military. I don't have anything against that. Just don't call it the militia.
Right. But I'm still stuck on the fact that, for example, the Pennsylvania National Guard is funded by the United States on a national level as opposed to a state level. For example, who does the Pennsylvania National Guard answer to?
Well, they pretend like they're answering to the state because the state can say, I'm not going to allow you to call it forth.
Right.
But in fact, they answer to the federal government. So the federal government could override the state because they are in charge of the national, whatever that word is.
But don't they have to be federalized in that case, like what happened back in the 60s with racial riots back then? I guess not.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
let's go back a little closer into 16. Paragraph 16, okay. Article 1, Section 8. It says, and governing such part of them, the militias, governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. May be employed in the service of the United States. Then it says, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers, the authority of training the militia, and according to the Constitution. But notice that at some point they become employed in the service of the United States to put down invasions, repel, suppress insurrections, and get the laws passed. The National Guard does those things, or supposed to do those things. So they've taken the National Guard and given them the responsibilities that the militia is supposed to have listed here. So the next thing you say, is the National Guard a militia? Well, what is a militia? 1828, when this was written, well, 1776, but when 1777, when this was written, oh dear me, 1787, when this document was written, they were using words as described in the 1828 dictionary. And the 1828 dictionary says every able-bodied man is the militia. That's not a National Guard. That's not that at all. Every able-bodied man is a part of the militia.
Right. Okay. And I don't mean to be too much of a purist, but the 1828 dictionary references the language of the 1787 time period, as opposed to the opposite, which would unless you're a time traveler, wouldn't work. But okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
So this brings me to a point that while we're talking about this, and I we have the National Guard creating this green zone in Washington, D.C. What I want to know, who in the hell, who are they answering to? Who's telling them to be there? Under whose authority are they there? Or let me rephrase that if necessary. Under whose authority should they be there by? I asked that.
See, the National Guards are not a proper agency to begin with. So they shouldn't be there. The states should have a militia there to protect the Capitol if the Capitol is under it. Just a second.
I can get that.
Yeah, got it. I did too. I don't like that phone to ring, but it does.
That's
anyway,
right.
if there were a militia, they would be there, but they're a state militia. But when they're called forth by Congress, then they're in the service of the United States. So the United States is in charge of the militia when it's called forth, but it's not, when it's not called forth, they're not in charge. You see, this is just a little bit of a sticky deal. They substitute, I don't know why they substituted the National Guard. Perhaps it was so that the federal government had more control over it. Think about it for a moment. When there was a militia, the guys came from the state. They volunteered. They came. That was the militia. They took their guns and put on whatever kind of uniform they could have. Okay?
Right.
And they went to fight. Both the Revolutionary and Civil War were done that way. Exactly. Now, there was no control of the federal government over that group. Pennsylvania militia could have picked up and gone home.
Right.
Could have, but they didn't, but they could have. Massachusetts and Revolutionary War could have picked up and gone home. Federal government didn't have control over that militia, you see. That's how it was envisioned.
Okay, now to your point, though, it's my understanding that the current situation in D.C., after those pictures of the National Guard, like from, I'm trying to think where from, North, South Carolina, somewhere, the governor said, okay, we're bringing our National Guard home. Now, I try to follow things pretty closely. I don't know if that actually did take place. But if what you're saying is I know it's true, could they still do that, I guess, is my question.
Could the Congress say no?
Well,
yes.
Yes,
they could.
Ask differently, yes. Yeah, okay. Huh.
If the Congress said no, if the Congress doesn't say no, then they can. But it's really not a state National Guard anyway.
Right.
We pretend like it is. But they're all wearing federal uniforms, Army uniforms.
Maybe we're getting to the heart of what's going on in D.C. with respect to this National Guard everywhere.
Now, I'm going to suggest something, just a little something. I don't know if this is true or not, but the fact that the National Guard is still there and they're funded by the military may say that the military is still in charge in Washington, D.C., and they're going to decide who goes in and out of those gates.
Thank you. You know,
and maybe,
thank you.
Maybe they're established to keep somebody in rather than keep somebody out.
Okay. When Eric the Tech came in today, we were talking, and I asked him the question. I said, you know something? I really want to know who is in charge and who is leading this country in Washington, D.C.? Who's really in charge? Because all I'm seeing around, again, you've got to go to D.C. to understand how significant the walls are and the razor wire. I mean, it's amazing they can build a wall. Amazing, the walls are good now, you know, the barbed wire.
Just not on the borders.
Right, exactly. But who's really running our government today? I asked Eric the Tech, and he said, I don't know. I thought you were. I thought it was your day to do that. But you're right,
you know,
though.
We've got a guy writing executive orders.
Yep.
Legally, executive orders only apply to the executive department. That's
right.
What they're called, executive orders. So they're orders of the executive department. They're not orders of California or orders for Iowa or orders for Utah or orders. They're orders for the executive department. That's what they say, executive orders. The executive is the president, and his executive department is his department to order. I think that's why he's using TSA to monitor some of the Homeland Security stuff, rather than asking the military to monitor it.
Interesting point. It certainly would circumvent all of this. Okay, this goes back to this fascist anti-fascist business. You want to talk about a fascist? Who's a bigger fascist right now? Was it Donald Trump or is it Joe Biden? 50 executive orders and actions combined, different things, orders versus actions. But anyway.
And Doug, yeah. Almost every one of those executive orders is violating our rights.
Yes.
Therefore, it's tyranny.
Thank you. And there it is. Wow. Folks, you might want to go back through this conversation again. There's a lot of nuances here in this conversation that we're having. I think that they're truth bombs by Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. That's his website. And it might clear up a few things for you. And it's interesting you said that. You know, keep people in or keep people out?
I don't know. I wonder. Now, think about it. Think about this for a minute. Just for a thought. We've talked about this before, but in the context of what we're talking about now, how did Biden get to the inauguration?
By private plane.
Would the military send him one?
No.
Trump picked up the nuclear football and Air Force One and went to Florida.
Yep.
Where is Air Force One today? It's not in Washington, D.C.
Okay, where is it?
The military is controlling where it is. The military is controlling the nuclear football. Didn't Nancy Pelosi say to the military at some point in this discussion, maybe before the election, maybe not, didn't she say the military should give her the nuclear football, the nuclear briefcase? I believe she did.
Yeah.
See the words, the military give it to her. So the military is in charge of giving that to whoever they give it to. And maybe they just have it. I think we have two separate organizations running the country at this moment.
I think you're right.
One of them very, very quietly, the military. The other one boisterous, but being controlled by the military to some degree.
All I know is I feel like there's something in my gut, which is, again, robust. No, I got a six-pack under here. my gut tells me there's just something not right.
Yep. You're right. There's something not right. Since when does our government put walls around its and not allow the citizens of this country in? Since when? Here's a nice question. If Antifa or Black Lives Matter came, would they allow them in?
With open arms, it's my understanding. I mean, they're the darlings of the left.
I would think that is exactly what. Be excited to have them come. Yes, sure. Please come. Give us a tour.
They were there on the 6th. In fact, they were the Time magazine, Time.com, Molly Ball wrote an expose which would serve as a courtroom exhibit of a confession of criminal, in my personal opinion, and to those people who want to knock on the studio door, okay, this is, we're still allowed to have opinions, would serve as a confession as to how they rigged this election in 2020 and how, and she named names that you folks aren't necessarily familiar with. I believe everything you're saying is right. And you know, I had my doubts when you had said, I don't know, it was around the 20th or thereabouts, when you had said, well, yeah, just hold on a minute here. Things don't look, you know, things are a little bit iffy. I'm thinking, no, I mean, you know, we just got it rammed up our backsides. Now I'm wondering, wait a minute, we might have it up our backsides, but not necessarily in the way we think. And it's starting to kind of come around to how you were.
Let's go back to the 20th.
Yeah, go
ahead. Let's go back. The Air Force One landed. To what? Flags, with Dreffels and Flourishes, 21-gun salute. 21-gun salute was done properly. Four guns every 3 seconds firing for 21 times. That's the way it's done. That's the ceremony. And they did it. In Washington, haphazardly put in a couple of guns and fought 10 rounds.
Right.
Ruffles and Flourishes. Ruffles and Flourishes, it's a military honor of the president. Didn't even play it in Washington. Played four times in Florida. The military did these things.
Yes, you're exactly correct. And folks, you can verify this. None of this is up for debate. You can verify this. And I'm still really confused or still concerned. The timing of the oath of office really bothers me. Okay. Why it was so, it was like 10 minutes early, 11, 12 minutes early.
9 minutes early. What's the deal? 9 minutes early.
Well, yeah. What's up with that? Okay.
Yes. So,
if we stand on ceremony, that it seems to me that should not have happened that way. And you're right about the bang, you know, the guns. There's something wrong. There's something really wrong here, folks. If you can't feel it, I don't know what to tell you, but there's something really wrong.
If we were to define it according to how people define things, I would say we've had a coup of the military because it's not doing what the president's telling it to do.
You know, but Biden didn't even have a chance to change his underwear when the military, assuming he changes it or doesn't have a nurse change it, when the military went into Syria, you know, so just saying, I don't know. Would it be the good military or the bad? I feel like I'm talking like a 6-year-old. Would it be the good military or the bad military?
You know, I don't want to put the labels like that.
Okay.
I want to say that the military's obligation is to secure the nation of the United States.
Okay.
And their purpose at this time is to ensure the Republic of the United States. And they're waiting until somebody says, let's do it, before they're going to take action. But they're in charge. I will speculate. If Biden said he wanted Air Force One, take him on a trip, I'll lay you dollars to donuts. They won't come.
Didn't he fly an Air Force One to Wisconsin? I think it was this week. Or am I mistaken?
I don't know. I didn't know he went anywhere like that. But I don't think he went on Air Force One. There'd have been a big thing about it if he did. They'd have been on all the broadcasts and everything. There wouldn't be any question.
I gotta check that out because I'm pretty sure Monday or Tuesday he went to Wisconsin. Of course, anything he's on is Air Force One.
You can call it that, can't you? That's exactly right. President's on board, it's Air Force One.
Right.
Does it have the nuclear codes?
Right.
Is it the real plane with all the nuclear information? Air Force One could run the military in the air.
Yes.
Private jet, Kent.
Something to think about, right, folks? Get your thinking caps out. Look, nothing is as it seems, and that's maybe the crux of today's program. Nothing is as it seems, is it? I mean, it just things don't feel right. You got military making an occupied zone in D.C. You've got military running things. You've got Biden, wondering where he is.
Remember when he was his caravan or cavalcade was running down the street? The military turned their backs on him.
Yes.
And this is the rank and file. The rank and file turned their backs on him.
Yeah, and I love how these fact checkers. By the way, there are no legitimate fact checkers. Okay, don't. But I love how the fact – well, they were looking for, potential enemy insurgents. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. It was in the middle of flipping nowhere, but, yeah, I gotcha.
And it was important to look for him because they always turned when he got there, and then they came back again. So they were watching for it right at the time when he's going by each time. That's very good. I'm sure that's what they were doing.
Hey, I've been trained to think that way.
Yeah.
We've been trained to think that way. Again, Dr. Richard Proctor, Provost Institute, folks, get the book, Saving the Constitution, as well as the Liberty Series. And if you already have the Saving the Constitution, get the Liberty Series. And if you already have the Liberty Series, get Bathroom Economics and all the books there, because they're good reads, and give them out as well. All right, sir.
You know, it's the only reason that I have the ideas and thoughts and direction that I have is because of writing the book, the Liberty Series book.
Mm-hmm.
If I hadn't written that, I wouldn't have these feelings or thoughts or direction. I wrote the Saving the Constitution because while I was writing the Liberty Series Volume 4, I saw that it was absolutely necessary. The Liberty Series was a core for me to get where I am today. I could not be here if it weren't for the Liberty Series. Anybody can read it and have the same information, the same feeling. Read it with intent. Don't just, oh, that's interesting. Oh, let's turn to page 10. Oh, let's skip page 9 and let's skip page 50. No. Read the book carefully. See what it says. Ponder.
You know, I will say this, and Eric the Tech can attest to this. Right here to my right are Saving the Constitution and the Liberty Series, as well as Bathroom Economics. I could get my hands on them if I bent over, which really wouldn't look good on screen. But we, in repairing the office and studio, we had to move, I don't know, about 1,400 books. That's a lot. Folks, that's a lot of books. Let me tell you. Okay, I should take a picture of the. I mean, it's a whole – so the only books that I kept available for my personal use – Liberty Series, Saving the Constitution, Bathroom Economics. And I'm serious about that. One or two others. But for the historical value, and to explain where we are today, that's really interesting. I'm glad you said what you said about the Liberty Series, because that's, you read it with intent.
When the Twin Towers went down,
yeah.
I watched it for a minute or two and had no doubt who did it. Because I'd already read and studied government stuff and how they do stuff in the government.
Osama bin Laden from a cave in Afghanistan.
Yes.
That's who you mean, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I mean, right. Uh-huh. The government does the same thing all the time over and over again. It's not new. Let's be absolutely blunt. Well, probably somebody won't agree with me, but I'm going to be absolutely blunt. Our government in 1940 and 41, but mostly 41, created the environment and encouraged the Japanese to bomb Pearl Harbor.
Yep.
The guy I can't remember his name, blast it all. The Joint Chiefs guy, the guy.
Forrestal? Forrestal? No.
Well, anyway, he's the major guy in the military in December and November of 1941. He invited all the newspapers to his office 2 weeks before the event with a guarantee they wouldn't print anything and briefed them on what was going on.
Dulles. Wait.
You'll find that in my book, by the way.
Okay. So what you're saying is pre-Pearl Harbor, pre-December 7th, 1941, and this is important to understand, too, Roosevelt was saying we're not going to get involved in the foreign war. So what you're saying, obviously, is we got set up at Pearl Harbor. That was kind of a sacrifice, too, at that time, the globalists or whatever you want to call them.
Because they knew the people would respond to that.
Right.
They responded to the Lusitania. They responded to the Lusitania, which was also planned.
Yep.
They wanted that ship sunk, and it was. People don't know this. The German embassy put out sheets, full sheets.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get on the boat. Don't, and nobody in New York City published it.
Right. I think maybe there was like a small independent newspaper, maybe a small little notice. But beyond that, it was largely unpublished. And you're right, because they were running, if I'm not mistaken, munitions.
Yes, it was an armament ship.
Right.
Yes. So the German embassy the Germans did not want to sink that, did not want any Americans on when they sunk that ship.
Right.
Yeah. Next, Wilson got in office. By the way, all of this is in the Liberty series. Everything we're talking about now. Wilson got in office based upon, I kept you out of the war during my first administration. He was reelected. I kept you out of the war. Immediately he started, after he's inaugurated, immediately began a publicity campaign, and he hired a publicity company to get the United States on a war footing, so they could be gotten into the war. Immediately, advertising was begun to get people to want to be in the war. So when the Lusitania was sunk, everybody was ready. A planned event, you guys, a planned event. Vietnam, a planned event. Guys, these are planned events. These are not accidents. They're not coincidences. The fellow starting World War One, statesman who was murdered in
Archduke Ferdinand.
Yes, thank you. Right, was murdered, and he was murdered. There were three separate events to catch him. If one missed, the next one was supposed to. They had three set up to get him because they wanted him assassinated. Then they used that, even though the governments that were there, everybody tried to apologize. Oh, let's not do that. Let's not war. Let's not go to war over this. They just fought. They didn't fight. They encouraged. They fought diplomatically. They went about and said, we don't want to be in this war. We don't want it to be caused because of that assassination. The power that's controlling us today, that same power, not the same people, but the same power, ensured that that war started. Then we come to the Christmas of 14, that Christmas, I believe it was 14. That Christmas, the lines for Christmas times, German and Allied lines, stopped fighting. They came together for Christmas. The Germans and the Americans, or the Allies, came together for Christmas that day. And they celebrated, and they played games together, and they sang together. And they did everything together. When the German generals told them to go back to fighting, they wouldn't do it. So they took them all off the line and brought people who would, because they wanted the war going on. The war ran out of money in 17. So our government financed it. So we keep going. The war was intended. It could not have been stopped. But it was intended by the powers that are directing us today. The same organization directing us today directed us then. Same one. It's a certain group of people that want that power for themselves. And they're taught that when they're born in their family, they want that power. And they are wealthy beyond our expectation. They have more money than you could think of. Okay? And that's why they can buy all the politicians. That's why they can do everything they can do, because they have so much money. And it comes from Federal Reserve, World Bank, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, comes through those means. Debt and interest and manufactured money comes that way. Counterfeit money, you could say. That's how come they have all the money they have, because they own the banking system. And the banking system is what creates money. You think the government creates money? It's the banking system that creates money. And that's all explained when I get into the economics portions of these things.
No, before you go to the economics part, just so people don't think, or just so you don't think I'm messing with you, I just picked up the Liberty series right here. Here's the series.
There they are, right in.
Okay.
Right there they all are, six of them. Yep. Not in order, but they're there.
I was going to say they're not in order, but
I'm not asking you to put them in order.
Yeah.
Six of them in the middle next to one. Yeah.
But here it is. And you're absolutely correct. And you know, all of this, just thinking about this, all of this really tells us what's going on today with Yellen coming in, World Economic Forum, but World Economic Forum's in here. You know, the Klaus Schwab, is saying, you know, you're not going to own anything in 2030 and you're going to like it. You're going to be happy. All of this is explained in this. And I just find these books very interesting. And of course, you can see my tabs, some of my tabs anyway. I don't fold pages back. I just, I use tabs. But anyway, that's a lot of weight there, brother.
Yes, it is. It's over 9 pounds just in paper.
Now I got to take a rest.
That's what's going on today. It's no different today than it was then. In the war chapters, I talk about every one of these wars, how they came about, what happened, who caused it, what to go. In the Depression chapter, in the economic chapters, I talk about what Roosevelt did to our country to bring about socialism. Oh yes. We talk about what Wilson's companion, the assistant president, Mendel House, mm-hmm. Edward Mendel House, what he did to make sure that the Wilson stayed in line, did what he was supposed to do. Kissinger was there to make sure Nixon stayed in line, do what he was supposed to do. Hey guys, we're controlled. We've been controlled for decades.
And is that why the hatred, and many people think that President Trump was compromised. Many people think, well, President Trump was just, you know, part of the Hegelian dialectic. In other words, he was compromised or somehow he was part of this larger plan. When in fact, he was perhaps one of the most attacked, not perhaps, he was the most attacked president from day one because he wasn't part of any of this.
That's right.
Okay,
right.
Good. So okay. Because,
right.
All right. Which brings me to the point, which is, if you listen to the media now, people will say, well, we're getting back to normal. Politics is getting back to normal now with Biden in office. Well, what does that even mean? It means, I think, it goes back to the control, which is outlined in the Liberty series, the backbone of the control. Because they want us as serfs and slaves.
Well, here's a key. Here's just a little tip. If you want to know what not to do, pay attention to the media, all of the media, because they're telling us what not to do.
Right.
If you want to know who to vote for, always vote for the person the media doesn't like. Always vote for that person because they don't want anybody in any position that will get in their way. So watch the media. When the media is pushing for something, you know it's right. Oh, I'm sorry. When it's pushing against something, you know that that's what you want. When it's pushing for something, you know that's what you don't want.
Right.
It's a key. That's a key. They are controlled 100%. They would be considered the fourth branch of our government. They would be considered the propaganda branch of the United States government. And they've been doing a good job of it. And our people run right along behind them, lockstep with whatever they say. I think it's fascinating. Well, they're going to bring us right into a complete. If it continues the path it's going, the media is going to bring us into the communist organization, and then the media will be rounded up and put in jail and prison and brainwashed because the powers won't want someone who would go against their own country to be in charge. So they get them rid of them and bring their own people in. And again, I go back to movies. If you want to see a real good illustration of this kind of thing with the media happening, get a hold of the first book, the first movies, V. Just a word, just the letter V, up and down, V, victory, V. Just get a hold of that movie and watch the first, not the first movie. There's two movies. V when it comes back and win the war, V when it was taken over. That's what you want to watch. The other one's just nice. That's the important one. You want to see how this is done? There it is. How people are controlled by the media, how their attitudes are changed, how their direction is changed because of the media, how they do it. It's all there. At the same time, you can watch Dr. Zhivago right after that.
I love that.
And see what to expect when the media gets through with you.
Now, I'm going to toss this question out there since the last time that you were on. I want to know, show of hands, well, you can't really do that, but comment on Rumble. Comment on Rumble. I want to know how many people really, seriously, genuinely watched Dr. Zhivago after the last time Richard Proctor had recommended that. I'm serious. I really want to know because to me, when you do watch, like he said, V, the original, and then Dr. Zhivago, you have a good understanding of what's taking place today. And they comment on under this video on Rumble. I want to know. I really do, for my own personal benefit, because to me, it brought back, it made me look at things a lot differently than when I first saw that movie way back when. I think when it first came out. I'm kidding. I wasn't born yet. But, you know.
Good. Now, here's another thought. When we're talking about things that are important, yep. If you want to know what's going on in our government and how the government's manipulated, read the books by Alan Drury. They were written in the 50s and 60s.
Yep.
If you want to read a very exciting author, get Robert Ludlum's books. He's written about 24, 16 of which describe what's going on today with a powerful organization taking over the world. 16 of his books teach that and show how it works and what happens. In each case, he has a hero that defeats it, but it's there. In 16 of his books, this is described. You want two other books, A Prologue to Love and The Captains and Kings, written by Taylor Caldwell. They're big books, but both of them describe exactly what goes on in the world of the Illuminati and the world of the conspiracy. The World Economic Forum is described in detail in the book Prologue to Love, in detail.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, those are things we'll teach you what's happening today. They're fiction. They're interesting books to read. Ludlum's is exciting to read. 16 of his books show you an organization controlling the world and what they do, how they do it, and what their goals are. He defeats them in each of his books. Are we going to do the same as he did in his books? They're good books, too, by the way. That's the guy who wrote the Identity series, Born Identity, and all of that.
Right.
That's not. Those three books aren't a part of the 16 I'm talking about.
Right. Right. Hey, well, let me get your take on things. I know you're not a prophet. You're not one to necessarily step out and say, "Yeah, that's what I think is going to happen." But let me ask you, do you have any sense of, no, Eric Deck said that sounded bad. Do you have any indication, feeling, gut feeling as to how what we're seeing is going to play out? I'm kind of curious.
I said to my wife last night, it would sure be neat to be able to see what we're going to think about all this in 6 months.
Yeah.
See, right now we're waiting very patiently for something to occur. Some aren't waiting patiently, but we should be. Something's going to occur. In a year, we can look back and see what it was and wonder how come we didn't see it coming. I've talked already today about several items that I see are indications that Trump is coming back again with the military doing it for, helping him do it. And they're going to take over. How extensively they're going to take over, I don't know. But I feel like we're going to have an awful lot of arrests. We're going to have an awful lot of people tried for treason, and an awful lot of people are going to have to be new people voted in to take their place. An awful lot of people, and I mean state and federal, lots of them, are going to find new homes with bars.
Okay, now people are going to say, well, that sounds an awful lot like you're talking about that Q conspiracy, you know. But you don't even have to even address that. You don't even have to talk about that. It's just.
I don't even know what the Q Anon even says. I've never looked at it.
Okay. Thank you. And we don't even, that's all you have to say. Because this is not about that. This is about what we're seeing and what we're looking at in real time and saying, wait a minute, you know, there's stuff isn't right. And, you could very well be correct. Given the set of circumstances we saw on the 20th, which you pointed out, given the, frankly, given the historical background, which you point out in the Liberty series, and how.
And the things Trump has been saying.
He
got in his sedan or his car, got in his car, and visited the people on President's Day in Florida.
Yes, he did.
And what did he say? I'll be back soon.
Yeah.
Watch the things that are said. Watch the things that are said. Is soon in 2 years, four, or is soon in a few days or weeks?
Well,
I don't know what soon means.
I contend that, look, if he waits to 2020, there won't be a 2024 in terms of elections if he waits that long. 2022, I didn't know there was
an election. The election system was destroyed by H.R. 1. We don't have any election system left. If it does show up, it'll be just a sham, allowing the people who win to win because they caused it to win, because they're fixing it so they can't lose. You know, they did that in Russia. They had elections all the time. Yes. Interestingly, who was elected every time?
No surprise there.
Well, that's what's coming in 22 and 24. If we have elections, that's how they'll be. There'll be nobody voting, and know your vote works.
Okay, now we saw, so you talk about two distinctly different scenarios, and I apologize for, again, taking you places that maybe you don't want to go to, but I find this interesting. When I watched on President's Day, the reception that President Trump received in Palm Beach, I mean, it was just, people were happy and they saw him. And I know the media wants to paint this as the Trump cult. In fact, somebody sent me a book, The Cult of
Trump. Remember what I said about the media a few minutes ago?
Yes. Yes. I know. But don't you find it interesting though? You've got one guy hiding in, you know, behind barbed wire or razor wire and, you know, 12 foot, 10 foot, 8 foot tall fences. And another guy out there with loads of people. And again, this is not Trump worship. This is embracing our republic as opposed to pushing an agenda of America last or anybody but America first. That's kind of the way I see it. But yeah, I find it very interesting.
I see that also. See that also. We have one guy that's trying to destroy everything that he can destroy, and he's doing it quietly behind locked doors. I'm going to destroy everything there is to destroy here. I'm going to destroy America in every way I can. And another guy running around, not running around too much, staying right in Florida very quietly, not doing much of anything, but whenever he gets out, he's talking about how great America is.
Mm-hmm.
Diametrically opposed views.
You know, what bothers me too, I might as well toss everything out that I'm thinking about. I have these kind of conversations with my wife, drives her absolutely crazy. I'll be sitting there and it's like I've got this mental Tourette syndrome, okay? I'll say something and she'll look at me and say, what are you talking about? You know, I'll say, remind me to send that package out. And she'll say, first of all, what package? Second of all, what are you talking about? And third, you know, you've been quiet for like 45 minutes and all of a sudden now I forgot what I was going to ask you, except I forgot what I was going to ask you. What would be the response? I guess what do you think the response would be from America, from Americans?
If the scenario I think will happen happens,
yes.
Is that what you want? Okay, the scenario that I think could occur is very soon, maybe the 4th or the 5th of March, I don't know, but very soon, could be later, could be sooner, he's going to come about and he's going to come in. Now, that's the scenario I think, and he's going to take over, and there's going to be a lot of people very, very upset that he's there because all of a sudden they're not free to go anywhere or do anything. Okay, anyway, so what do I think will happen? America will cheer. The Americans will cheer. The left and all the people that are brainwashed by the media will be angry. He took over. Oh, dear me, dear me, dear me. And we'll go right back to bashing Trump again, just like we've done the last 4 years, while he makes America great.
But see, okay, now I'm on my game, okay, arguably, okay, but here's the thing. What you said earlier about the media, I said something about the media and you said media and then that stopped me in my tracks. But wouldn't he have to take control of the media in order to quell a real insurrection. In other words, let's just stipulate for a moment that everything that we're talking about here happens where President Trump comes in because the vote was fraudulent and everyone knows it was fraudulent. And if you don't know it was fraudulent, you got your head so far up your butt, I don't know what to tell you, or you're brainwashed. But he came back, he would have to take control over the media because the media could create an insurrection where none would be necessary. Isn't that true?
Right. Oh, yes. I didn't mention everybody that I think will be behind bars. All the media people, this is what I would think. This is what I think I would do. Okay. If I were in the spot, okay. I'm not, but if I were, okay, if I were, the Congress would be nearly empty.
Right.
They'd all be incarcerated. The cabinet would be nearly empty. They'd all be incarcerated. The media would have to find a whole bunch of new people that run the media and to write the stuff. In other words, the media would be almost gone.
Right.
Okay. The states, many of the states will have their entire major organization gone, and including their representatives. Okay. I believe that's how many people would be incarcerated. It's the only way. You've got to root out this cancer. If it doesn't get rooted out like that, we will continue to have the same problems and the place will go continually the same way.
Right.
And this is demonstrated in the books written by Alan Drury, because he has that scenario exactly happen in his books. He has two people diametrically opposed from each other, one conservative, one liberal. They are both standing on the podium because one's going to be president, one's going to be vice president. I don't remember which it was. It doesn't matter. The podium blew up. Wow. Well, both their wives were there, too. The podium blew up, exploded. Aha! Two were killed. One woman, one man, not the same couple. So what he did then is he went on to a book called Come Nineveh, Come Tyre, where the left guy and the wife of the conservative guy survived. But the left guy took over. And at the end of that book, by the inauguration day, Russia was in charge of our country. Okay? That's how that book goes. The other one, Joy of the Presidency. That one, the president, the conservative guy wins and the wife of the liberal, lives and the wife of the liberal lives. But the conservative guy then takes over, but he doesn't clean house because that's not an object. And they treat him exactly the same way they've been treating him all along. The media chose the left guy and it just really built him up. Oh my. And he was elected. He was elected president. He was there. He was the president. But the media did it. And in the latter part of that book, the media is all wondering why they're going off to be brainwashed. And it's because the Russians don't trust them. You went against your own country, you'll go against us. Took him out. What? I'm on your side. No, you're not. You're going off. But in the Joy of the Presidency, the same problems exist. The media still blasts him, constantly goes and beats him to death and beats him to death. But the country goes along normally. That's the two different books showing the different views. Now, if Trump comes in, and does what he could come in and take office and not clean house. Then they'd continue to bash him. He'd have the same trouble getting anything done. With all the evidence he's got, he doesn't do it. He would have the same trouble getting anything done for the last 4 years, maybe even worse.
Probably worse.
But if he cleans house, he'll have a presidency. You could consider the Joy of the Presidency, because then he will be able to do things like he wants to do, because the Congress won't be there like it is today. Now, when I talked about the states,
yes,
an interesting thing is going on right now. We have a whole bunch of states that are voting for no electoral college. They're going to throw it out. Even our state, Utah, want to throw it out. Right now, they're voting on whether or not we're going to follow the national popular vote. Nobody's even talking about when they talk about the bad part of the national popular vote. Nobody even mentions the fact that nobody's vote will ever count again. The votes will all be controlled from New York City and California. And it's only going to be from the major areas of New York City and California. So we've got those people will control all of it because they control the national popular vote, because there are so many of them that are corrupt and want gimme programs and want this. So the people in Iowa, the people in Utah, the people in Montana, the people in Idaho, the people in Nebraska, the people in Kansas, their votes will not count anymore at all, ever. Because their states are turning to, we're going to go, our whole group is going to go with the national popular vote. That's how you destroy a country. All the representatives and all the congressmen, all the legislators that are fighting for that need to be in that same place in Guantanamo Bay or wherever it's going to be. You've got all the media doing much of the same thing. Now we're going back to the states again. Got to stay with the states. We have many states also fighting for constitutional conventions. Do you know what a constitutional convention is?
Oh, please, please.
Destruction.
Yes. I am so glad you're talking about this because I've been getting emails. What about a CONCON, constitutional convention? Yes.
Oh, dear me. You mean some of your readers or listeners are wondering about a CONCON? Well, let me explain what a CONCON is.
Late just to the so party. That you'll know. The ones that are right. Late to the party. Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I'm going to go clear back to the Articles of Confederation.
Okay.
The colonies sent the people to the members to the Articles of Confederation with instructions. The gavel went down. Bingo. Bam. The gavel went down. And they threw away all their instructions and did whatever they wanted to do. Now we come to Philadelphia. Well, there was another convention in Annapolis, but it didn't have everybody come, so they didn't do it. It was done the year before, 1786. The convention was organized in Annapolis, but not enough people came, so they disbanded it. And they set about to do the one in 1787. When those people who were all selected by their state governments and given instructions, you are not to change the government. You are to only fix the Articles of Confederation. Nothing else. Nothing else. Nothing else. Bang the gavel. We'll do what we want to do. So now here we have a group of people going to a CONCON. I have seen the constitutions that are going to be proposed. We have people in our society today, thousands of them, that are in places of absolute power that want to destroy our Constitution. They're the people that would be going to the Constitutional Convention. That's who's going to do the CONCON. The same ones that today are voting for it in their state legislatures because they want it too, because it ties their hands too much. So what's going to happen after the gavel drops at the Constitutional Convention in 2021? Bingo. The very first thing they're going to do is start talking about which constitution are we going to do? And they've got about, five or six of them. I have one on my computer. Now, there are no rights in that computer, in that convention. None. All the states say, well, you don't have to worry about it. It won't be bad because the states have all got to ratify. That's a bunch of garbage. When the Articles of Confederation, ratification was everyone unanimous or it's not accepted. Every one of them had to vote for it or it's not accepted. When it went to Philadelphia, they said 2/3. It changed. The CONCON that comes out now will be a committee in Washington, D.C. that will ratify it. That's what it'll be. You think that if they're going to come back to the states and say, is this okay? No, siree. They're going to come back to the states and tell you what your life's going to be from now on. A CONCON will destroy our country as we know it, all by itself.
Thank you. I couldn't have said it any better than you did.
And that's historical.
Yes.
That's exactly what's happened with every one of them.
I just find it very interesting how many people want, instead of fall, and this goes back to your book, Saving the Constitution, folks, it does, because in the back or at the end, it kind of goes through the steps of how we can save the Constitution, save our republic. But I find it very interesting how many people want to move away, or think they're fixing something that is broken but doesn't. Well, you don't have to burn it down and rebuild it. Not the structure, not the infrastructure. The people that are abusing it must go. The you know, the laws, or not even laws, but the unconstitutional laws, I suppose. Everything unconstitutional has to go. We have to get back to the original Constitution. And as you said in the very beginning, you know, it's up to us. We are directed to, in the Constitution, we're directed to fix things that go wrong. I'm not sure what words you used, very eloquently stated within the Constitution, but yeah, you fix things.
Right now, what you're talking about, I'll say it a different way.
Thank you.
People think that they're going to send people to the CONCON to fix the balanced budget problem.
Yes.
They think they're going to send it to fix another amendment, term limits or something. They think they're going to do that.
Yep.
And that's how they're being taught. That's what they're being said. Everybody, oh yeah, we can control them. Last year, we decided in Utah we were going to have a debate about a new CONCON. I knew what was going to come. So I got in touch with the representative from Kaysville that's in the House. And I wrote to him, and I wrote more than once, and finally somebody answered me. Who was it? It was one of his chiefs, one of his guys. And he said to me in the emails, he said, no, but we know we're going to control this CONCON that we're talking about having, because we're going to pass that, but we're going to control it because we're going to give instructions to the people who go that have to follow it. And I said to him, just like I just said, well, the people can't be controlled. And he came back and said, oh, but we will control them. But they can't be, but we will, but they can't be, but they will. So the last one said, okay, I want you to tell me big red letters. I took what he said, put it down at the bottom, and then in big, big red letters in the email, I said, how? And I never heard back.
never got a response to that, huh?
Never got a response.
How?
Because you guys, these people that want the CONCON want the destruction of our Constitution. They're just pretending like they're going to fix something.
Right.
But the second the gavel goes down, no instructions that were given to the convention will be followed. None. Do we have statesmen today in our society like Washington and Franklin and all those guys, Jefferson, Madison, all those guys that wanted a country to work? Or do we have a bunch of people who want to throw it out the window and get power and control?
It's the latter, obviously. I'm always amazed, and maybe I shouldn't be amazed. I'm never disappointed, I suppose, at the number of people in government who will sell out, you know, who will give away their country for wealth, when in fact we had and may still have President Trump who really gave away his wealth for his country. And you're so right to getting back to President Trump in a sense that, I'm not sure if he knew 100% what he was getting into, how bad it was, but I know, I believe going out that door, he knew how bad it was and how bad it is. And, I don't know, but you're right in terms of statesmen. Where are the statesmen? Where are the people who care about the Republic?
Exactly. You know, we have a lot of people bad-mouthing the founding fathers now.
Yes.
A guy wrote a book, said, Jefferson lies. That's what he said. I wouldn't read the book. I'm not going to read something telling me about Jefferson's lies. It was the wrong title. It was the lies about Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can read it. And it's exactly that. He's explaining all the things that they're trying to bash Jefferson with.
Yep.
That's what he's trying to say. Let's pay attention, he says, to history. That's not how it was at all. Stop bashing him. But today we have a society bashing our founding fathers, Declaration of Independence guys and the Constitution guys. Now, I would like to challenge everybody, and I know this is really an assignment, but I would like to challenge you to look at the history, the aftermath of the Declaration of Independence, and what happened to every one of the signatures of that document. Every one of them.
Yes, please. Follow up on that. Maybe you won't be surprised. We've got a great intelligent audience. I don't know. But, not an easy life after those signatures appeared on that parchment.
They were all hunted as traitors. They were going to be hung if they were caught. In fact, every one of them lost everything they had.
Yep.
They lost their in some cases, they lost their families, but they all lost their money, their mansions, their comfort, their lives. Oh, yes, all of them.
But they had the guts to put their signatures on that paper. And that's what we're lacking today, in my view. We're lacking the people with the guts to be signatories to saving the Constitution, saving the Republic. One other thing, I'm going to be spanked if I don't ask you this. There was an essay written in The Nation, a publication called The Nation. It was written today by a guy by the name of Nathan Newman. All right. Now, he wrote, and people on the right are talking about this as well, as much on the left and the right, as potential fixes for where we're at right now. Left-wing Nation essay calls for, and I quote, blue state succession. We got people on both sides of the political spectrum calling for succession as the only way to avoid a civil war, as the only way to avoid bloodshed, as the only way to fix the republic is to secede. How do you feel about that?
How was our republic born? Bloodshed.
Yep.
The tree of liberty have to be watered with blood periodically.
Yep.
The people who are saying we don't want to have bloodshed, we want to have secession, are really saying we don't care to have a country, we just care to not shoot anybody. Now, I agree that we don't want to shoot anybody. I think that if the militias in the counties would stand up, that the government officials will leave and not bother them. I think that. But they have to have enough power to do it. I talked to Tom Watkins, good fellow Tom Watkins. He's been trying very, very hard to put together a militia in his county there in California. What's the major problem? The people, I'm talking about men that say they want to have their rights. These people are saying, oh, I don't want to put my name on a list. I don't want to put my name on a list. I don't want to get my name there. I don't want to do that. They'll come and get me. Guys, that's not the answer. All you're really saying is, I don't care whether or not we have a country. I only care that I don't want to be a part of it. Those were the Tories. Those are the people all through the Revolutionary War that sat there with the British and had parties and took care of me because they didn't want to have their name on a list. They didn't want to get caught. They didn't want to be in trouble. They wanted to be safe.
Brilliant.
Our country came about because of the people that said, I want freedom. Better to live to die than live on my knees. I want freedom. Give me liberty or give me death. All those things. That's the kind of people. And we must have them. We would like to not have a war. But if the states that want to secede do it, we will destroy our country. Now, I think, for example, California needs to secede. Goodbye. That's all right. I shouldn't say that. You know, a young lady called me the other day. Now, she won't like what I just said because she probably just heard it. Name is Patricia Moore. Nice young lady. She told me about New California.
Right.
The state of New California. She says it's almost being created. It's almost being done. I asked her in the conversations that we had over email. On the phone too. I asked her how many, where are the counties? Who's with the new state? And who's going to stay with the old state? And her answer, only the big counties that control the state. All the rural counties are going to go with the new state. The number she gave me was like 5 or 6 will be with the old state and 50 will be with the new state counties. So when I say that the California should go into the ocean, what I'm really saying is that Los Angeles and Frisco should go into the ocean. Seattle needs to go into the ocean. Portland needs to go. Those places where the big politicians are that are corrupting their state. I want to recommend that all the good people move out of those cities so that the other cities can go somewhere.
Well, this kind of brings us back around to what you initially started talking about. You know, the answer exists in at the county level, at the county's local level.
Yes.
As you pointed out from the start, people who talk about succession to me, and I look at succession as like a divorce within a family, okay? It never ends well. There's always acrimony and there's always problems. You've got children involved, especially. There's always problems. So rather than do it that way, okay, let's just follow the Constitution. And if we have to, we remake the government pursuant to the Constitution as instructed by the Constitution. It's the original instruction manual for our country. Let's follow that. And as you said, go ahead.
A lot of people badmouth Lincoln, and they badmouth him because he took away states' rights. Folks, no, he didn't. States' rights were taken away by John Marshall in 1816, not by Lincoln in 1860. States were controlled by Marshall from that date on, 1816. The Supreme Court took over the states and decided their laws and decided their government. That's what the Supreme Court did. Now, what happened when Lincoln took over? He saw, in his wisdom, and he was very accurate, what he saw was that if the country split, we would be two countries ready to be taken over by the big countries of Europe. We would lose. We would be gone. The country split. It wouldn't be able to survive. Neither could survive. We all had to stay together. That was the same attitude of the guys in the Constitution. Some of the guys in the North wanted some things. The guys in the South didn't want those things. I'll mention some of them. Okay. Here's a major thing. Trade was controlled by the North. The North was controlling the trade of the South, intending to cost the South money. And they wanted that power, and the South didn't want them to have that power. Most people in the North wanted slavery banned, but people in the South wanted slavery to stay. Why did they want slavery to stay? Now we're talking in 1700, late 1700s. We just had a Revolutionary War just before the Constitution Convention, just before we had the convention. We just won the Revolutionary War. Now we're meeting and we're going to ban slavery. And every one of those men in that room doing the Constitution wanted to do away with slavery. Every one of them. Well, why didn't they? Because the Southern plantations had borrowed money to develop their plantations. They borrowed money from the Bank of England, and the state, the slaves, were the collateral of the plantation. If we freed all the slaves, the Bank of England would take over the South completely and be gone. Because they just take over all the plantations
We don't read that in the history books, or we're not taught that in history, or we don't hear that in the media.
Yeah, you don't. That's right. You don't. Here's another thing that almost cost us the convention. The number of people for representation. How many? The states wanted big numbers, 50, 60, 70,000 per representative. The small states wanted 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 per representative. Why? Because the big states, if we have 50,000, all the small states will just have one, and we'll have lots. If we go with 2,000, all the small states will have power, and we won't have as much. That's what that was about. You'll see that happening in the movie A More Perfect Union. It shows Madison's efforts to have the big states be in control. That's what the Federalists wrote in the Federalist Papers. Big states are in control. Big center government. What the Anti-Federalists wrote was states are in control, small federal government. We have a Bill of Rights because of the Anti-Federalists. We don't give them the credit. In fact, we always read the Federalist Papers and forget to read the Anti-Federalist Papers. And the Anti-Federalist Papers are more what we need to read. But anyway,
here. I received an email from Pam, and she is from Kansas, and she asked me to ask you if you are more of a Anti-Federalist Papers person, and I'm quoting her, or a Federalist Papers person. What should I read? Basically, what should I read?
Well, if you want to know how this country should be run, read the Anti-Federalist Papers. They wanted the Bill of Rights. If we didn't have the Bill of Rights today, all of our freedoms would have been gone long ago. Yep. Long ago. Second Amendment wouldn't be there to even be talked about.
Thank you. That's right.
So, and it was the Anti-Federalists that caused that. They're the ones who insisted on having that. The Anti-Federalists were for small government. The Federalists were for big government, and that group of people, Anti-Federalists and Federalists, existed in the convention also. They were part of the convention. I'm going to point something out that I think is very important that happened in the convention because small states and large states, because of the Anti-Federalists. Article 5 says that the Congress, whenever two-thirds, shall do can propose an amendment. It also says the legislatures with two-thirds of those can ask for a convention, but Congress will do it. So in both cases, the first two methods, Congress is in control. Okay? Then at the bottom, which nobody ever reads, except the people who read my books, at the bottom, nobody ever reads, or, comma, or. Now let me see what that says. It says, comma, or. I got to move the paperclip. By conventions in three-fourths thereof. Now, that sentence is all by itself. And then it talks about another comma, as one or more of ratification may be proposed by Congress. What the people say is, what the people not understanding what the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists were doing in this paragraph, they say that the ratification process, what they were talking about in that, or by conventions. No, they were talking about states having conventions in their own states. Now, that was put in. We have a comma and then an or above where Congress does it. We have a comma and an or next when it says that the states will ask for Congress to do it. And then we have a comma or an or when the states can do it by themselves without asking Congress. The states were jealous of their power. The small states particularly were jealous of their power. That comma and or was, I believe, just the dicky, I believe this, but that comma and or was put there by the Anti-Federalists so that they could have amendments to the Constitution without asking the federal government. The federal government is in charge today of everything. The states have little or no control or anything. We are now a Federalist organization. Look how bad it is.
Very, very well laid out. Thank you for that. Because, you know, I was reading through the Federalist Papers and that, okay, so what you just said there answers a lot of questions for me. I'm going to have to, of course, read the Anti-Federalist Papers. And Pam, there's your answer. Kansas City, Kansas.
Pam. Yes, Kansas City, Kansas. Young lady, if you want to take a side, go with the Anti-Federalists. They were protecting your state.
Yep.
And your rights.
Very interesting.
Not like the other guys wanted to have Washington, D.C., and New York City, and Los Angeles, and all those big countries, Chicago, controlling your life. That's what the Federalists wanted. That's how to choose.
And it's interesting, you know, I believe, again, going back to your original premise, the original conversation that we were having about the counties being the spark plugs, the ignition point for change, you know, I think about the morals of this country. I think about the theology, the spirituality that we find in so-called flyover country. All right. I think about that versus the immorality that we see and the lawlessness that we see in the big cities. I believe that there are more people who want to adhere to our original ideals than there are in the big cities. You might have a more vocal element in the big cities. You might have more media attention to the big cities, but I think on a per capita basis, population basis. I believe that more of us want that original constitutional God-given rights as delineated by the United States Constitution. That's what I believe, and I believe we can be victorious that way. And if not, you know what? Like you said,
Jefferson spoke to that very subject.
Yes.
He said it this way. He said, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't quote all the words perfectly. He said it this way. He says, as long as the country remains an agricultural country, freedoms will exist.
Yes.
When we get to the big cities and everybody moves to the big cities, then corruption will exist.
And
today, deplorables in the flyover countries are more agrarian, and the bad guys are in the big cities.
And I have to say, you point this out in many cases in the Liberty series. Now, not directly like you just said it just now, but this is pointed out in the Liberty series as to how we got here. And isn't it interesting how all of the Agenda 2030, the Agenda 21, the World Economic Forum, they're all pushing people into the big cities. You got to stack them and pack them and control them. You control their transportation. I mean, even to the extent where they want to outlaw the gasoline engine now, make everything electric, as if, you know, where do you get your electricity from? Just saying. So what you said is exactly 100% correct, and you write about it in the Liberty series. ProvisInstitute.com, that's Dr. Proctor's website. This is, these are very valuable. This series is very valuable. So.
Now let me wander in another item. Let's look at the Revolutionary War period and our period today. A very interesting item happened in 1956. Senator Johnson decided he was sick and tired of the churches having control over the people. So they passed a law, and it's a 501c3 type law. They passed this law, Congress did it, that says all churches won't be taxed as long as they're a 501c3 organization. But if they're not a 501c3, then they will be taxed. Now, he said that he was protecting the churches, but he wasn't protecting the churches. He was taking the power away from the churches. Now, let's take that situation occurred in 1956. In 1776, 1777, 1778, 1779, they had what they called the Black Regiment. Does anybody have any idea what that is?
The Black Robe Regiment, right.
Well, that's right, but they didn't call it that. They called it the Black Regiment.
Right.
The ministers were the Black Regiment. They were teaching their people the freedoms. It was the ministers that got the people together to get the war done. It was the ministers that was the key. In 56, Johnson, in his wise words, took away the power from the ministry. Now the ministry can't talk about things that are righteous. They can only talk about things that the government approves. So if you talk too much about abortion, they'll take away your 501c3 status, and you'll have to be taxed. But they were never taxed before, but because of that, they will be taxed. They lost that ability. They lost the ability to say what they wanted to say, or they would lose their taxation status. That's what Johnson did. Trump wanted right at the beginning to change that, but he came up against Congress. Congress wouldn't let him do it. Don't blame Trump for these things. Congress wouldn't let him do it. He couldn't do it. It was a law in the books. They wouldn't revoke it. He could not do an executive order to overrule the law.
And PolitiFact speaks to this, and I'm not a fan of PolitiFact, but I'm just saying, for example, the claim is Donald Trump on July 12th, 2017, in a CNN interview, said that I've gotten rid of the Johnson Amendment. I signed an executive order, so now that ministers and preachers and rabbis and whoever it may be, they can speak. You know, you couldn't speak politically before, but now you can. And you're exactly correct. Although he made that statement in PolitiFact, in this case, happens to be correct, saying that he can't get rid of a law by way of executive order. It's only the left that can do that. You're exactly 100% right. And you know, how we were snookered with the 501c3 and the Johnson Amendment.
Yes.
It's just amazing.
Now, what Trump did, what he was talking about, what he actually did, was he told the IRS to not enforce it.
Right.
They worked for him, so they were told not to enforce it.
Right. The Secretary of the Treasury shall ensure, to the extent permitted by law, that the Department of Treasury does not take any adverse action against any individual, house of worship, or other religious organization on the basis that such individual or organization speaks or has spoken about moral or political issues from a religious perspective, where speech of similar character has, consistent with law, not ordinarily been treated as participation or intervention in a political campaign on behalf or in opposition to a candidate for public office by the Department of Treasury.
Whew. Yep. Well, that's what he did.
Yeah,
he made it. Told them not to enforce it, but he couldn't take away the law. So the people, the ministers, still feel it's there to, no matter what.
That's right.
And so they're afraid to say what they should say. And nowadays, they've gone so far to that direction that many of them don't even want to say what they should say, even if they didn't have the 501c3, because they want to keep people coming in an entertainment thing that doesn't tell them bad things. You know, like John the Baptist, he wouldn't have had a very big congregation if he'd been in the city in New York.
I love that. That's true. And folks, when Steve speaks about the puke coming from the pulpits, this is what he's speaking about in terms of the mamby-pamby kind of thing where, you know, everything, the happy, clappy Christians, it's not like that, okay? It's not like that. And we see that just one issue, just the abortion issue, for example. Joe Biden, this second Catholic, big to-do, second Catholic president of the United States, Joe Biden, hey, yay! Well, okay, he talks about how, you know, how abortion is fine, how the murdering of children is fine. When I say children, I'm talking about already born children, and they leave them to die. That's Joe Biden. And that, by the way, that's this 501c3 crap that we're dealing with. You can't talk about that.
Our ministers, they're afraid, so they won't do it. And they continue to be that way. See, there's another factor in there. If they become taxable, if they lose their untaxed status, then every donation made to them is also going to be taxed.
That's
all
right.
The people will lose that too.
Yep.
And they won't, they'll stop donating as much money because they can't take it off their taxes. Folks, that's because the damn 16th Amendment was passed. And that's the first thing that should be nullified by every state. The damn 16th Amendment is what's destroying all these things. There shouldn't be any taxes on people anyway. There shouldn't be an IRS. Direct taxes are for the states, not the people. Get the thing out of here. That is a completely unconstitutional amendment. There's only 8 words in there that have anything to do with the Constitution, and those are the words that say the government can tax people. And that's it. That's all that's constitutional in that statement. They copy the first paragraph of Article 1, Section 8. The first few words are copied. And then it deviates from the Constitution 100%.
My word. We had a revolution for less, okay, than the 16th Amendment lays out. So, or makes the law. We had a revolution for less. I am right on that, right? I mean, I can say that.
I don't know. I think to myself that state legislatures should start nullifying anything from the government, even pass things from the government that are unconstitutional. Just nullify. Get them out of here. Nullification would change the Senate. The Senate would be back to the state's power because that amendment is unconstitutional. 16th would be gone, so we wouldn't have an IRS anywhere. Direct taxes on the states would occur again like they're supposed to. We wouldn't have draft. We wouldn't have those kinds of things. There's a lot of things we wouldn't have. Supreme Court would get back, would be called, well, never be called, but they got to do what they got to do. Everything would be right. Decisions of the Supreme Court wouldn't be law.
That's right. You know what? Dr. Richard Proctor, Professor, I don't know how you do it, but I'll tell you what, this time flew by. I'm getting the hook from Eric the Tech. I want to say thank you so very much. It was a very, very, very great 2 hours of just absolute incredible information. Folks, Saving the Constitution, Bathroom Economics. Gotta go. Have a good night. Good night, everyone.